Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin is daf Dalet, and we're holding right at the top of the daf. Let me just remind you what that was all about, because we're still holding in the middle of this. Yeah. So the idea here is we've been looking for a mocker in the Torah that Kiddushin is able to be achieved by Kesev, and we want to know that the Kesev, in the event that father was Mekabel Kiddushin, that kesev would go to the father. We were having trouble proving it until we realized that the original diyuk, ein kesev, yatzah chinam ein kesev, that idea, ein kesev ladon zeh v'yesh kesev ladon acher, which we thought was in terms of the yitziyah, but not in terms of the relationship to whom the money would be given, it would simply tell us that a yitziyah from the rishus of an Odin, in this case the father, who is an Odin over her, so that would be done by money. But how would we know that the father would take that money in the event that she was a Nara, and how would we know that she couldn't be Mekabel or Kesef, keep the Kesef for herself, and so on? That we ended up saying because what we meant was is that Yitzia de Kavata Kamamayat. In other words, it's not saying simply this Yitzia versus another Yitzia, but rather a similar Yitzia. That is to say, what would be the meaning of the Yitzia mi Adon, from her master as an Ama, that the money, in the event that there were to be Kesev, would have been given to the Adon. Therefore, over here, where we're saying there is Kesev, by implication, to the other Adon, it means as well, where would this money go? The same place the money would have gone had there been Kesev to that Adon. Which means that over here it goes to the father. That's where we ended up yesterday, and today we have some additional problems with that meaning. Asks the Gemara. It isn't really true, though, because, I mean, you're making it sound like we're able to make an actual comparison, or contrast, I should say, really, between the yitzia from the Odin of the Amma to the yitzia of the father, and therefore would all be juxtaposed very beautifully. She leaves the rishus of the Adin without giving him any money. She leaves the rishus of the father by giving him money. So that would be the juxtaposition. The problem is that there's no basis for you to claim that these two things are meant to be perfectly juxtaposed in that way, because actually, the whole thing doesn't really make much sense, because the Yitziyah, even in terms of the actual Kiddushin, to achieve the Kiddushin, forget about where it goes, is not really the same at all. Because in the case of the Amma, the Yitziyah is a true Yitziyah. She leaves the Rishus of the Adin. The Adin has absolutely nothing to do with her from that point on. So she's Nafkala Mirshut Adon Lagamre. Mashenkein, over here in the case of a Kiddushin, if we're talking about a Nara, she is still not actually completely out of the rishus of the father, because the one who has to give her over to the chuppah, even though she as a katana, she would be maybe mikudeshet, but in order to be able to leave her father's rishus completely, and that her father shouldn't be able to actually, as we learned from the pasuk kol shevach ne'urim, from the other drasha of Odin, that he still gets the money that she's making, so he would still be the one that would be Yoresher until such time as the father actually brings her to the chuppah. Then she's Yotze totally from the shus of the father. But before that, she is not Yotze totally from the shus of the father. So then that means that we're not really comparing the two Yitzias. I mean, the whole idea of here that you've based all of these halachas on is the claim that we can actually compare and juxtapose the Yitzia of an Amma with the Yitzia of the father. It turns out that the whole thing is fundamentally an error, because where's the Yitzia? Where did she leave the Rishus of the father? Even Benogea, her marriage, she hasn't left the Rishus of the father, because the Knis of a Chuppah is the only thing that's going to achieve the Yitzia totally from the father. So it's not the same at all. True. It's not the same entirely. However, if we can find one area where it does make sense, where we can say that there was a total change in her relationship to the father, it would be in the area of Hafarat Nedarim. So up until this point, the father was able to be made for Nedarim all on his own. But at this point, even though she was not Yotzi from his Rishus in terms of his keeping her salary and stuff like that, but he can no longer be made for her Nedarim on his own. Ditznan Na'araha Mu'urasa Aviyah Uva'ala Mefirin Nedariah. He can only be made for the Nedarim together with the Baal. And therefore, that is Yetziah. Now, this is very strange, isn't it? I mean, it's not a Yetziah. First of all, it's only a Yetziah in terms of the Nedarim. And secondly, it's not as if he doesn't have any Rishus over the Nedarim. He still has Rishus together with the husband, the Arus. So how are we comparing that to the Yetziah? If the question was that we need to compare a total Yetziah to a total Yetziah, you have not addressed the question. What's the Gemara talking about? There's a very interesting suggestion that Aliba the Shita of the Rambam, the Gemara makes more sense. Because according to the Rambam, the Hafaras Nedarim of an Av to a Bat is not limited to Hafaras Nedarim of Inui Nefesh, the way a husband's Nedarim, Hafaras Nedarim, is limited to Inui Nefesh. What would it have to do with Inui Nefesh? The Torah gave Rishus to the father over Nidrei Bita. Masha Enkein, once he needs to be made for as a Av with a Orus, at that point he no longer has any Rishus to Nedarim that are not Inui Nefesh, you see. And therefore, in terms of the Rambam, this is a very Achreinish suggestion, I must say. I think it's the Beit Yishayahu says. And therefore, when it comes to the idea of Hafaras Nedarim, there are Nedarim for which it was Yotzei Legamrei Rishus Av. Very cute Svara. But the Rishonim don't assume that that's the point. And as some speak out, we're only looking for one area in which we could say this is a real Yetziah. When it comes to marriage, it isn't a real Yetziah because the achievement of the marriage, in order for him to be Yorish and to have all of the other dinim, is dependent in her being able to be Yotzei Legamrei, and here she was. Okay, ask the Gemara another problem. You're claiming that we learn the halacha of Kedushe Kesed out of V'yotzachinam. But the problem is that we need those words V'yotzachinam in Kesed for a different drasha entirely. V'yotzachinam, I should say, in Kesed as well, because obviously it's the two together that is the source of the drasha. Is it l'hachi hudahata? It's coming to tell me the din of Kedushe? Amiboy l'kiritanya. I thought that we needed to tell me a very important halacha, namely that there is a yetziah for an oma ivriya directly from the rishus of the adin when she becomes a nara. I thought that was the whole point of the pasuk. I mean, it's repetitive, right? Yatzachinam ein kasef. Why would we need both? Well, hold on, and I'll explain to you. The Tanya says in the pasuk yatzachinam. Well, from there, what would I know? I would know that there is a state where she will leave entirely the Rishus of the Adayin. But, I mean, obviously, if I'm not told otherwise, I would assume that that would be the state of Bagrut, where she's already completely mature. So now she is a full adult on her own. But maybe when she becomes a Nara, which is just reaches puberty, maybe at that point she would not be Yotzei from the Rishus of the other. Therefore, the Torah adds the words Ein Kasef to tell me, even Yemei Na'arut takes her out. So we need both of the words, Yotzachinam plus Ein Kasef, to tell me both dinim, that she would be Yotzei as a Bogeret, and now we have the bigger Kiddushi, Yotza, even as a Na'ara. Omer Avida. Yes, that's a good point. We do need it for that. However, there's an additional drasha here that you're not paying attention to. And that is the fact that the Torah spells Ein Kasev with a Yud. Why would it need to write Ein Kasev with a Yud? Lema Kro Ein Kasev without a Yud. My Ein Kasev with a Yud. And by the way, there are Rishonim that learn that the Gemara's question is, it should say unkesef, Not because the English un, there's a Talmud of the Rashba that writes this, but un kesef means honor kesef, meaning there would be no money involved here. Very far-fetched, but okay. We'll see, there's a lot of issues with this particular Gemara from many, many places. Now, it could have written ein kesef, despite the fact that the Torah always writes ein with a yud. As Tosus points out in Avodah Zarah, that there's a very strange kind of drasha. But note that we do make this drasha in many places. We make this drasha by zera ein la in terms of a yevama ayein la. We learned zera, and that's the, boni. Zera ein la in terms of a woman who was a bas kohen who married a Yisrael, ein la. And so on and so forth. There's many drashas that it means ayin. So we darshan the yud as if the word is saying it has to be totally, clearly without. So ayin, go look all over the place to make sure, which means that even things that you wouldn't have thought were included would be included. So therefore, it could have written ein kesev like that. Why does it write ein kesev with a yud? That's coming to be darish at all, meaning ein kesev ladon zeh, but to imply yesh kadon kesev ladon acher, and that would be in fact the av, and so on. Okay. Is there any boker in the Torah for assuming that we could have written ein kesev without a yud? How do you know that this is a valid drasha? Well, we see. The Zera Einla, take a look at the Braita. Zera Einla. So there it's talking about she can go back to Beit Aviya, Ginu Ureha, and she can go back to eating Truma. Einli Ela Zara. I would think only if she has her own children. How do we know if she does not have any children of her own surviving, but she has grandchildren? Zera Zara Minayim. And even if she had grandchildren, they would prevent her from going back to her father's home to eat truma. Talmud lomar zera ein la, ayein la. Look all around to see, is there any at all, any zera, is there any DNA? Ein li ela zera kasher? I would have thought this is only kosher children. How about if she has illicit children? Now, of course, the question is, if she has illicit children, anyway, she is posel from eating truma, because the only way you can have illicit children is if you slept with someone illicitly. But if she did that, then she would have become anyway a zayna, and she would have been posel for achilas truma. So how does the Gemara ask this? Tosus explains. The question whether the children are illicit is not referring to her children, it's referring to those grandchildren. How do we know that even if those grandchildren are a bunch of mamzerim and her children were the ones who committed whatever they did and had these grandchildren, how do we know that that registers as children in terms of preventing her from being chozer lebeis aviyah to eat truma? Also, Talmud lomar zera ein la. Ayein la, look into it. Wait a minute. You use the word ein la to teach me grandchildren. How do you all of a sudden use it to tell me illicit grandchildren? Nah, I don't really need a pasuk to tell me zera zara. Grandchildren don't need a pasuk, because the Gemara elsewhere learns out the halacha that bnei banim harein kevanim. This is a gaviism, but not when he is driving. Maybe he's not driving, or maybe lukma, no hands driving, good heavens. Maybe he finally got himself a Tesla. We always knew he'd get to the top. So, b'nei banim, harein kebanim. Now, that's a complicated limud that the Gemara learns from Mochir, ben Menashe, that is considered to be from Yehuda, the children. How is that possible? Mini Mochir, b'chokakim is Yehuda. So anyways, we learn from there that the grandchildren of Yehuda were also considered to be from within elements of Yehuda. Okay. But the point is that we don't need a pasuk to tell me b'nei banim harein kebanim to teach me that if she has grandchildren, she can't go back to her father's home to eat truma. Therefore, the real drasha is that if she has grandchildren who are psulim, that those also prevent her. Yitzchak lezera pasul, that prevents her from going back to eat truma. Okay, you're showing me that the Braisa did this, but how do we know from the Torah that we can do this? How did the Tana of the Braisa realize that even though the norm is that Ein is written with a yud, that somehow or other we can darshan the yud to tell me ayin. That's what I want to know. Tana gufe minole the darshin and haki. Where does the Tana get the idea that we actually are able to make that type of drasha? It seems a little bit far-fetched. Is there a place in the Torah where we actually darshan it that way, where it's clear that the Torah writes it without the yud? Says the Gemara, there is indeed. Where is that? Well, I'll tell you, Amri. It says, Me'ein Bil'am. That's Me'ein Bil'am Alochim Anu. Bil'am refuses to come with us. Or, Me'ein Yivami. My Yavam refuses to be making shame be Yisro, which is what the Yavama says when she's coming for Chalitza. So how come over there it doesn't say a yud? And over here it does say a yud. So Shema Minala Drasho Diyasa. That means that the extra word is for the yud. So now the Ricky Vager assumes that what this means is that those two words come from the same shorish. In other words, Me'ein, the mem from Me'ein is essentially built on Ein. And it's not part of the Yikra shorish. This is a Nogea Hilchos Kriyas Torah and Hilchos Ksivas Sefer Torah. We'll see. That's why it's even in the Mishnah Brura this question, because many of the Rishonim seem to argue on that, and the Mishnah Brura brings rias to that. That Me'ein and Ein are not really related, because the Lashon, as the Rosh says, the Tosafos Rosh, he says that Me'ein is the Lashon of Mi'un, not from the Lashon of Ein at all. So it's only a drush over here that it means Bilam doesn't want as a remez. And since it doesn't say Me'ein Yibum, Ela Me'ein Yibum, so we're darshaning it as being an implication of Ein. The question over here, I'll tell you why it's so fascinating, because it's Nogea, the dinim of a Sefer Torah. Well, no, the halachas in a Sefer Torah, according to one sheet, is that if there's a mistake in the ksiva of the Sefer Torah that adds or subtracts a letter, where that letter's presence does not change the way that you would pronounce a word, so the letter is only there in order to make it clear to write a ksiv male, but I'm not going to change my pronunciation. In a case where there is a vav or there's no vav, I'm going to still pronounce the cholam. Case where there's a yud or there's no yud, I'm still going to pronounce the cher. So therefore, the Ramah brings from here, basically, that what it's showing is that you can ignore a yud from this Gemara because you'll still pronounce the tzera, so that you won't say any difference between Ein with the yud or Ein without a yud or Me'ein. That's the point. In which case, if the Sefer Torah was written Me'ein, let's say with the yud, in the case of Abila, Me'ein. So then, since the point of the Gemara is that doesn't make any difference in terms of the pronunciation, according to those shitas, you wouldn't have to take the Sefer Torah in the middle of the Kriya and put it back. Okay, that would be the Nafka Mina. So that we find. There are those who hold that where it's Nogea Halacha, this is very fascinating. Even though it's not Nogea, the pronunciation, let's say Basukot, or Shridarsha. So Basukot with a Vav and Basukot without a Vav is very significant in terms of the number of defanais of the Sukkahs. So those Shitas hold, that's a Shaila, a Truva of the Ritvaz, those Shitas hold that over there, it is Ma'akev, the Kriya of the Sefer Torah, even though it doesn't make a difference in how it's pronounced. So it's amazing, because then over here, that's the whole point, because then the Ein does make an Afkamina, because we're the Gufa being Derish, the Ayenla, right? Anyway, it's fascinating. It's like a really big sugya. Tosis points out in Avodah Zarah that obviously we only are Makbid on the question of whether there's a Yud when we know that there would be an additional meaning to it. So in other words, if the Torah didn't want us to make the drasha of Ayin La, then it should have avoided the Yud. Tosis uses that svara in many places, that where it's possible that you would have made a mistake, let's say Mitzrayim versus Mitzriyim, like the Gemara talks about, it points out, well, we never write with two Yuds. But if you're going to make a mistake, then the Torah would have clarified it. So he says the same thing over here, Lagabe, the idea of Ein. If you're going to be understanding it as Ayin to include Zarapos, and you weren't supposed to, then it would have Badafka left out the Yud. That's how Tosus explains it. Not that it's a general way in which I would have assumed that I would write Ein. But anyway, this is like a very fascinating thing. It occurs in a few places. So I'm just bringing up, you know, how curious it is that it would be, yeah, so many different things. Mamash halacha l'maisa, in terms of what's happening in Shul, you know. Okay, anyway, so Shmami Nele Drosher V'Diyas. So now, so what are we learning in the end? We're learning the idea of his rights to Kedusha. That comes from Ein Kasev, Yesh Kasev Vaday, right? And his rights to the fact that he is considered to be the owner of her income, even as a Nara, that we learn out from V'chiyim Kor Ishat Bito, and that's the remez that he's considered to be like an Adam to her. Those are two separate pasuk. So do we really need two separate pesukim to teach me the dinim of the father's zechus to the kesef kedushin versus the father's zechus to her income? Why can't we learn out one from the other? Says the Gemara, because they're not the same at all. Itzrich lemichtav kedushya la'aviha, ve'itzrich lemichtav ma'aseh yadeha la'aviha. There are two different things. I'll tell you why. Let's say the Torah would have let us know that the kedushin goes to the father. I would have said the reason that the kedushin goes to the father is because she didn't do anything for it. She doesn't work for the kedushin, and therefore, since the father is the one that's been taking care of her, so it should go to him. Why would it go to her? Mashenka, well, she's doing the work. It's her salary. I mean, it strikes you immediately. I mean, if she's working, ma'aseyadeh tikatarcha bahu, I would have assumed that that goes to her. Emadidah. Now, we're in the other direction. Suppose the Torah would have told us that even ma'aseyadeh go to the father. You would think so for sure. That would be, but the Kedushin should go, not true. I would say maybe the reason that ma'aseyadeh go to the father is because the norm is that the father is taking care of her. The father is providing for her mizoynus. So therefore, her work, her salary, which would normally be that which would be providing for her own income as a free human being, and she's buying her groceries and so on, so that should be given to the father in exchange for, again, it's not a chiyuv, remember, after the age of six, but for the norm. So the thought that the Torah is responsive to those social norms. Machenke Gidushia, I mean, like, that's out of left field, you know. So, I mean, what does that have to do, really, with an exchange for something that she's been getting from him? So maybe that would actually go to her. That's what I might have thought. So over there, I mean, the father was all along planning on having this income when she's working, you know, taking care of her, but she'll pay me back. But over here, I would say it's another game. Therefore, I need two completely different people. Okay, let's get back now to that strange brisa, because I'm very disturbed by it. You said that we need both the Yotzeh Hidam and Kasa. And the only reason that we were able to utilize the pasuk for what we wanted to in terms of condition for the father was because of the extra yud. How the heck do you understand that brayta? The yotzach hinam eliyim me bagrud, ein kesev eliyim me bar narud. I mean, then why don't we just write the yimei narud? I don't understand. If she's going to go out with narud, why are we talking about a yitzia of bagrud? We should mention only the narud. So let the Torah write the narud. I don't need anything to teach me about bagrud. Obviously, she can't be an Amma if she's holding by Bagrut already. Oh, my Rabbi, well, obviously not. The point over here is that the Pasuk is saying, you don't really know what it is. It just says V'yotzeh Chinam, right? So you ask yourself, okay, what does V'yotzeh Chinam mean? So you would say V'yotzeh Chinam means the most obvious thing, that if she's already reached the stage of Bagrut where she's a full adult, so at that point, V'yotzeh Chinam. I would never know that just because she has a couple of pubic hairs that she's now ready to be Yotzeh Chinam. Therefore, I need the extra pasuk to tell me that Bazev and Limeid Azeh, if they're two limudim, and there's only two stages that it could be referring to, then obviously one was referring to Bagrut in order to teach you that the other one is referring to Narut. That's the point. I'll show you that this is done. You know about the din of a Eved Ivri that a Kohen owns. Now you would think that maybe if the Kohen owns him, so then that is included in Kinyan Kaspo, Uyokhaobo. And maybe an Eved Ivri would be allowed to eat Truma because the Kohen purchased him. Comes along the Torah to say specifically, Toshav v'sochir lo yochal kodesh. They are not allowed to eat truma. Absolutely not. Okay, so what is the difference between the word toshav and what is the meaning of the word sachir? The Tanya, toshav refers to a nirtza. So a nirtza is going to be working for this adayin for the next 50 years. Maybe he's going to be working all the way up to yovel. And the sachir is somebody who we look at him as essentially being a hired hand because he's only working for a period. So he was hired for 6 years. Masha Enkin, the Nirtza, he is there forever, except that the Torah came and takes him out because forever it defines, not in terms of the time, but in terms of Yovel. It's a totally different issue, right? Okay, so now asks the Braisa, says Rabbi, your question, asks the Braisa, why doesn't it just say Toshav? And then it wouldn't have to say Sachir. And I would think to myself, what am I crazy? If even a Kanoi Kinyan Olam is not allowed to eat Truma, Kol Shekein, a Kanoi Kinyan Sharim is not allowed to eat Truma, so why do I need to have both of these Psukim? Lo Kol Shekein? Ah, see, this is exactly what I said, says Rava. In Kain, if it would have done that, then I would have thought, well, maybe if it only wrote the Toshav, I would have thought the Toshav means a Kohen Kinyan Shamim. I mean, I only know from the juxtaposition of the two terms that one of them is more of a permanent thing than the other one is. But if I wouldn't have the juxtaposition, I would have said a Toshav is somebody that's with the Kohen for the next 6 years, he's going to be working there. And but maybe a Kohen Kinyan Olam is really part of the family. And at that point, he does actually eat Truma. Right? I mean, after all, how did he get to be a Nirtza? Haftiyat Adoniv. I mean, he's part of the family. That's the point. But Sachir really made out Toshav. That's why I need both. So now that I have both, I know that it's got to be two stages. Now I got to think about, okay, which one is more mashma, which? So the Toshav is more permanent. The Sachir is less permanent. And but Sachir really made out Toshav. Sha'afa pi shekonek in yonaylam. Now I know. Even though you would have thought he's part of the family and he's here forever, in Ochel, he still can't eat Truma. So you see that the Torah will employ one term to clarify another term, even though you're not learning anything out really from that term other than the language. So I think that I'm right. No, that's ridiculous. It's not comparable at all. For God's sake, me dummy, in the case where you have the Toshav v'sachir, is it possible for a person to have two different avadim right there in front of him right now? This Kohen has a Toshav and this Kohen has a Socher. One guy's going to be here for the next 5 years, the other one's going to be here until Yovel, right? So if the Torah discusses a Toshav and discusses a Socher, there's a very reasonable basis for the fact that these two people actually exist. But you cannot talk about a Nara and a Bogeret, because the Bogeret doesn't exist, damn it. She's already not there. So you're saying the Torah is discussing a ridiculous case that doesn't exist, and it's speaking nonsense in order to clarify the language? How do you do such a thing? It's a lie. A Bogeret will never be going out from an Adayin. She's only going to go out as a Nara. By the time she's ready to be a Bogeret, she's not there. So what's Rava? How can you compare the two cases? The Torah's not going to tell you a lie. So if basically it wants to give over the din of Na'ar, would have had to say that the Yitzhiyah of Na'arut is enough not to play these games when it can't even happen. That doesn't make any sense. Let's see that insight. Ha'atam trei gufeinim. There are two different individuals. One is a Toshav, one is a Socher. So even though the Chinami Katav Rachmana Toshav Nirtza lo yochal, even it would have said beferish. And then it would have said, beferish the other one, non-nirtza. What would have been the big deal? That you would have said to yourself, oh, The Torah is telling us what? Something that we would have known as a Kal Vachomer. How could that be? There's nothing wrong with that. Milta Da'atya B'Kal Vachomer, Torah V'Katzav Lakra, which is another Gavi Klal. Something that is able to be learned from a Kal Vachomer, you can never ask, so why did the Torah tell us I could have learned it out from a Kal Vachomer? If there's something else to be learned, that's one thing, but you can never ask because the Torah will often tell you something that you could have figured out with a Kal Vachomer, because it's different if it's your logic and if it's written beferish in the Pasuk. So the Torah sometimes writes it in the Pasuk. So it wouldn't have been a problem. Because Havisachar, Milta Da'atya B'Kal Vachomer, Milta Da'atya B'Kal Vachomer, Torah V'Katzav Lakra. But in this case, it's a straight out lie. I mean, it's talking about fantasy. Chad Gufi, there's one person, when she becomes a Nara, she's no longer an Amma. So how could she become a Bogeret to leave her Adayin when she doesn't have an Adayin prior to Bagrut? Therefore, Bagrut, my boy Gabe, why is she still here as a Bogeret? And therefore, it can never happen. I'll tell you, says Abaya, there's got to be another explanation, and Rav is not taking inspiration over here. It's not for the clarification of the meaning of the terms. You know why the Torah wrote Bagrut? Because there's a case where a girl becomes a Bogeret without ever becoming a Nara. Aha, that's the case. So this is a case where she is an Islandess. An Islandess goes directly from the stage of Katnut to the stage of Bagrut without passing through the specific pubescent stage of Narut. That's the 6 months, which is post the original onset of puberty. So the Torah gives her 6 months to be a Nara. But an islandess never reaches puberty. That's the whole idea. So she goes directly from her status as a Katana to her status as a complete Gedola, as a Bogeret. Now, I would have thought, says Abai, if it wouldn't have said this crazy halacha to teach me that a Bogeret also goes out from the Adai, I would have thought that maybe that maybe with the beginning of puberty, that's when you leave the state of Oma. But bebagrut lo tepuk, if you've been there and never reached puberty, maybe you won't go out just because of the fact that she's a Bogeret. Therefore, kamash malan, comes along the Torah to say, no, a Bogeret is also yotze, even though she was never Nara. For that, I need this extra word. So that's what it says. Yotze chinam and kasev. Both are necessary. Matkif lamar baravashim. I don't like to. I mean, I agree that Abaya is a very brilliant explanation. And that, yes, it's got to be talking about Bagrut without a Narut. That's the only possible explanation. But I don't believe what Abaya says I would have thought without the Pasuk. I would have thought that what? She would remain an Amma forever? Nah, that's a Kal Vachomer. Of course we wouldn't have thought that. Well, Av Kal Vachomer, if Simonim are not very powerful Motziim. I mean, after all, are Simonim going to affect the right of the father? Is it going to take her out of the Rishus of her father? No. So Simonim are not Motziim Rishut Av. But nonetheless, those Simonim, our Motzim Rishut Adon. Bagrut is a much more powerful Yitziah because the Bagrut takes her out of the Rishus of her father. Totally. So if Bagrut can even take her out of the Rishus of the father, Koshikin, it takes her out of the Rishus of the Adon. The whole sugya is just so amazing. How interwoven the issues are of the Bechira La'oma, the Didim of Kedushin, which of course is backed up by the fact that Bechira La'oma can be used for Kedushin. I mean, that's the Yi'ud, right? Im lo Ya'ada. Whoa. I mean, the whole Vehevda and the difference between where ain't Kesef, that you don't take a Pidyon, the relationship of Pidyon to Yitziah, to Alma Ivriya, and then even the ideas of the connection to Shivcha in terms of La'ala, in terms of the Yitziah of Gittin, and the concept of Adnus, which is Nogea, the father, and the Odin in terms of working, and the relationship of Adnus being implied even in terms of certain elements of her relationship to her husband, that the same things happen, keeps her income, so on and so forth. seem like amazing kind of sugyas, which, as I pointed out on in the introduction, is nogea, the question of what mitzvahs the individual is chayav when they have their duty bound to human relationships, and that changes the mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from them. It's amazing things. All of those sugyas are all in this first parak. Wow. Okay, anyway, I'm sorry, I keep going into ecstasy over the different, but it really is astounding. So, okay, so therefore, kosher came, and this is the different stages of development even, right? So if the simonim are not motzim rishus av, they're nonetheless motzim rishus adam. So kosher came bagras, which is motzim rishus av, I don't need a pasuk to tell me it's going to be motzim rishus adam. No. Well, so why'd you say you think it was brilliant? Nah, I do think it's brilliant. But I just think he didn't conclude correctly about it. Here's what he should have said. What he should have said was not that I would have thought she would have remained in the Rishus of the Odin and she would never have gone out. I think that's nonsense. But what I would have thought is that I would have thought that you can't even sell an islandess. Why? Because she's not included in the dinim of the Yitzia, and therefore she can't be an Oma at all. That's what I would have thought. And that if it's such an atosis point, how are you going to know? That's not going to know. But the point is that in the event that she had been sold as a ketana, turns out to be an islandess, she can sue for all of that work, all of that money, sue her father, sue the other, and get all of it back. So I would have thought there is no way to sell the islandess in the first place because she's not included in the Torah's description of the process of Yitzia. That's the brilliant point that Abaye should have brought out. So the very fact that you're allowed to sell an islandess in the first place, that's the chiddush, the v'yatzachina. Sakadai tachamina, because I would have thought, in the event that she's included in the dinim of the Torah, namely that she is going to be a nara and she will have signs of puberty, then the sale is a good sale because then all of the steps follow. At the moment that she is able to be yotze with simonim, so then she's yotze. But in the event that she never will have these simonim, delo atya simonim narut, so then I would think, oh boy, this is a big mistake. The sale is not a kosher sale because she's not part of the whole sugya. That's the point. That's why I need to mention Kabash Velad V'yotzachinam to tell us, no, an islandess can actually be even though she's never going to be a Nara, she can be an Oma. Sounding beautiful. Now, let me just ask you something over here about just one point. What's Mar Bar Avashi bothered by? But what was he saying? Abaye did not bring this out properly. So he was saying, isn't it a Kal Vachomer? And an islandess for sure would be Yotze. And why did Abaye say, I would have thought she wouldn't be Yotze? Of course she would have been Yotze. So, I mean, but that's not a good enough reason to say that I don't need the V'yatzachinam. You're telling me I would have known it anyway. So, didn't we just say, Milta Dati Bagav Chomer, I saw that as a Tefer Shagaviism. Milta was on Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis in Gavi's notes. So Milta Dati Bagav Chomer, Torah V'Kasev Lakro. So what are you asking? What's the big deal? Kal Vachomer. Yeah, but I didn't disagree that it would have been a Kal Vachomer. It would have been a Kal Vachomer. He's just saying that the Pasuk describes it. What's your problem? So Hamrina Milta Dati Bagav Chomer, Torah V'Kasev Lakro? Yeah. But that's only if I don't have a more brilliant explanation. I, Mar Bar Avashi, I have a beautiful explanation. And I'm saying it's coming to tell me the Iker Zvina of the islandess. What do I have to start coming on to Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis in Gavi? Absolutely not. It's a Dover Pashut that it's needed for its own self, I'm explaining to you. It's coming to tell me Iker Zvina da islandess. Lovely. Okay. So far what we've done is we've had a completely different basis for the idea of Kedusha Kesef than the one that we referenced right away after the Mishnah, right, on Beis, which was the Kira Kira Misteyefa. So this indeed was our attempt here to find among the Amoraim, a marker for Kesa. But the fact is, there's a Braita that the Tana is Maita Neacha. There's a Tana that brings it from a totally different Mikor, which of course we already peeked ahead, because we were bringing at the beginning of the Sugya, we were bringing the point of why we're using the word Kinyan. So we mentioned it. But here is the source, Tana Maita Neacha. The Tana. Yikach ish isha uva'ala, yayayim lo timtzach, ein beinav, kimatzaba, ervat avar. What is this kiyikach ish isha uva'ala referring to? That word kiyikach is a reference to money. How do I know it's a reference to money? Again, I mentioned to you earlier that the correct translation of kesef may not be money. The correct translation may be silver. It's a big machlokas rishonim, whether the determination of the concept of kesef, as the Rambam says, is a particular amount of a metal, which changes many, many din, and this is going to be central to us in Bav Metzia. How did we define money? And how do we define commodities? So if we have a concept called shove kesef, is a copper pruta, is that money or is that a commodity? That makes a big nafkamina in terms of the dinim of rebate. Okay, but we'll get there. Let's just remember over here, I'm just using the simple translation when I say money, but it might be misleading. So, but anyway, says the Braita, this is a reference to Kedushin that is achieved through Kesef. How do I know? Because V'cheinu Amar Natati Kesef HaSadeh Kach Mimeni. So Kicha is in terms of Kesef, and remember, as we spoke about earlier on Daf Beit, even though the kicha is not the same, one is the kicha of the woman and one is the kicha of the money that I'm giving. But the point over here is that the transaction is called a kicha transaction, as Tosfos explains. Now, the question is, why would I need a pasuk to tell me that this is the Braita addressing our thought process until now in a completely new way? Why do I need a pasuk to tell me Kedusha Kesa? Can't I learn it out from an Amma Ivriya? If an Amma Ivriya, and there's yet another complex interwoven relationship, if an Amma Ivriya, now I cannot buy an Amma Ivriya with sexual intercourse. It's not going to help. It's not a kinyan. But nonetheless, I can buy her with money. So if I'm able to buy a woman with Bia as a wife, so then for sure I should be able to buy her with money. Says the Gemara, well, how could that be a good kavuchoma? What about a Yavama? A Yavama, the only way to be kena a Yavama is dafka through Bia. And if you give her money, that's not going to make any difference other than the Drabonin, of course, the Drabonin would be takin ma'amar, but she's niknet b'via, and she's not niknet b'kesef. So therefore, the same thing is true over here. Einodin, in this case, therefore, now what? She should be niknet b'kesef? That's clearly not true. We see that kesef does not achieve the same thing that you do with Bia. So it's not true. The fact that Bia is a kinyan does not prove that kesef is a kinyan. All right. I mean, come on. I mean, obviously, a Yavama is not really involved in the kinyan. There's a whole different point when it comes to Yavama, isn't there? I mean, the point of the Yavama is that no kinyan will work on a Yavama. It's misleading to say that Bia isn't a kinyan. The point of the Yavama is that the kinyan emerges from a reproductive act, because that's the point of the Yibum. Point of Yibam is to be making shame. So the whole idea is its purpose is reproduction. So a reproductive act is obviously what it takes to conclude Yibam, and then she becomes your wife. But there's no way to be kine in terms of kinyan. There's no shtar that works for Yavama. So, okay, so if that's the case, then it's obvious that kesef is not going to work. So how are you comparing apples and oranges over here? Mashenkin, a normal marriage, which you are involved with kinyan, the raya is, you can write a shtar. Now, what the heck does a shtar have to do with marriage? Okay, so then it makes sense. What the heck does money have to do with marriage? It's the same thing. And therefore, we're talking about kinyanim, which of course goes back to our original phraseology in the Mishnah, Isha niknet. But that's the point, is that it's niknet, and not that the kinyan emerges from the relationship, but vice versa. That's the whole idea of erusin versus marriage. I mean, it's incredibly intricate and subtle ideas. Well, how are you comparing these? That's why we need ki yikach ish. What? You just said we don't need God. You're driving me nuts over here. Did you lose track of what you were saying? We don't need ki yikach ish is what you're saying now. I understand. You started off with the question that it's a kal vachomer, right? I'm a ivriya, so for sure over here. And you tried to tell me that kal vachomer, that's not a kal vachomer, because yevama will disprove the kal vachomer. And I explained to you that yevama does not disprove the kal vachomer, because yevama requires a reproductive act. Now I understand that we have popped down a few levels, but if you'll pay attention, what that means is that we were left with a kal vachomer and therefore don't need a pasuk. No, what are you telling me? And that's why we need the pasuk. Thought I could count on you to keep track of what happened. What are you saying? Talmud Lomar. Talmud Lomar? Lama Likra, Akila, we just proved it. I just answered why we do have a kal vachomer from the case of the Amma. No. I'm Rav Ashi. When the Tana does that, he does it to drive you nuts. So that's when he says, and therefore, what? What do you mean, and therefore? What just happened? So he wants you to think what just happened must have been that this whole thing was totally spurious logic, and that you've been wasting your time and you've been simply spinning your wheels. Can we get back to reality? Therefore, the Torah says, but what was wrong with my logic? The whole thing was ridiculous. From the first moment, the whole thing was ridiculous. This idea that you're going to be able to learn that you can take from kesef, from Oma Ivriya, and Oma Ivriya, the relationship is a monetary relationship. How do you know? She can buy her way out, right? She's Yotzer B'Kesef. It's only if she wasn't Yotzer B'Kesef. Im lo Yotzer B'Elus, then V'Yotzer Chinam Ein Kesef with Simonim. That's why we talked about Kesef, for God's sake, because there is a way to be Yotzer B'Kesef. So obviously, if the whole relationship is a monetary relationship, so then it makes sense that you could buy her. What does that have to do with a woman? Can a woman buy her way out of a marriage? No. She's only Yotzer B'Get, she's not Yotzer B'Kesef. So how can you apply the type of thinking that would apply to an Amma and saying it's a kal vachomer, that definitely it would affect the kinyan by an Isha? That is utterly off the wall. Once you understand that we're looking at the nature of the relationship. The nature of the relationship with the Yavama is one thing. The nature of a relationship with an Amma is one thing. The nature of a relationship of marriage is one thing. They are not comparable. So Tomar Bezu, what you're going to see over here with a normal Pnuya, She'ena Yotza B'Kesef, that's why you need Ki Yikach Ish. And the price of a Dafka played games with you to move around all these different things for you to wake up and realize, you know, this is all basically intellectual games. If you think about what we're talking, the nature of what we're talking, you'll understand that you've got to penetrate to the underlying sense of what is achieved in all of these cases. And then you would never have asked such a silly question. Okay, so that is what the Braita was actually trying to say by using those words. All right. Chodesh Tov, L'chaim, L'chaim. I don't see anything in your hands that's attractive, but actually, I think I have to make another bracha, as I finished in the tree. L'chaim, Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nihyeh Livono. That's Kesef. Next, Uva'ala, continues the Braisa. So when it says ki kach ish isha uvala, that tells me melamek sheniknet b'viyah. Because what the heck do I need this? This pasuk, remember, is about divorce. So why do you have to say ki kach ish isha uvala? Oh, you should have just said ki kach ish isha v'lo matzachein b'enav. And the katav la sefer kritut. Is this what you want to start talking about? And of course, the reason that you took her was in order to sleep with her. That's crazy. Therefore, it must be teaching implications of the kicha. That's the point. And it's telling me that just like there's kicha with kesef, there's actual kicha with ubala. Isn't that obvious? Valodino? If a yavama, you cannot buy a yavama. You can only sleep with the Yavama. And that's the only kinyan that you have on there. So Koshikain, where we've already proven that in a normal marriage, you can actually give money and achieve a marriage, then obviously you can achieve a marriage by sleeping with her. Well, now wait a minute. Once again, we have our tripartite interrelationship over here with Yavama, Isha, and Amma. And Amma Ivriya proves it. Because you can buy an Amma Ivriya, but you can't sleep your way to owning an Amma Ivriya. So maybe you could sleep your way all the way to the top, but certainly not to the bottom in terms of owning the Amma. So that shows that just because you can make a kinyan with money does not mean that you can make that kinyan with Bia. That is ridiculous, says the Gemara. Well, obviously you can't, I understand, you can't buy a car with Bia either. That's the point. The Amma Ivriya, why in the world would you be able to buy her with Bia? Mal Amma Ivriya she ein kinyan ala shum ishut. The purpose of buying an Amma is not for marriage. That's not to say. Naftali, this was just tickling us. That's not to say. That's not to say that it isn't related, because obviously it is related, because you can always use that money in order to be able to change it to a marriage, right? Which is called yiyud. Okay, I understand that, but you still are not buying her for purposes of sex. You're buying her to be an amma. She's supposed to be cleaning your house. I mean, your wife may suspect you. But, I mean, that's not what it's really all about, officially, right? So if that's the case, if the Amma is not being purchased, the Shum Ishut, Tomar Besu, where the whole point is the Shum Ishut, and therefore it makes perfectly good sense, right? So there's no way that I would be able to have actually learned this from the Amma Ivriya, and therefore I cannot prove that it's not a good Kal Vachomer. Therefore we need Uba'ala. I can't believe that you're doing it again. Therefore we need Uba'ala. Therefore we don't need Uba'ala. You just said that it would be able to prove it from the case of the Yavama. You tried to say I would need Uba'ala because of the Amma Ivriya, and I proved to you that no, that doesn't prove anything, and then you lost track of where we're going, you say, that's why we need the pasuk. No, that's why we don't need the pasuk. What are you talking about?
Is Rebbe's mic different? Rebbe's sound just changed.
The sound changed?
Rebbe sat back there.
How about this? Is this okay? Maybe I just knocked the mic a little bit, sorry, but you did hear. Okay, fine. So then, what are you talking about? Talmud Lomar Ubala. We don't need the pasuk. You just proved that we don't need the pasuk. I just answered you. Same idea, says Rav Ashi. When the Tana does that, he expects you to back up and say, uh-oh, I'm obviously not thinking clearly. What did he mean? Because Mishum Dikala Meir Mikor Dadina Pircha, the whole thing is nonsensical from the beginning. What are you trying to do? You're trying to bring a raya that Bia is Kena from a Yavama, because the Yavama is not having kesef. A Yavama is already achieved what it is that Kiddushin achieves. The Torah created a relationship with a Yavama. She's zikuka va'omedet. She's already, in a sense, your wife. Before you do Yibam, and before you do Chalitza, could she marry anyone else in the world? No. Why not? Because she's yours. So that means that the Torah has already given her to you. So obviously, if that's the case, then over there, it's clear that if there is already the relationship of a kinyan, you can complete that kinyan with Bia. But the whole point was, as we've understood from the beginning, if the meaning of erusin is to provide for the potential of a sexual relationship long-term that we call marriage, how can it be achieved by doing the very thing which it's meant to achieve in the first place without getting to the point where you're already sleeping together? It sounds crazy. And you're trying to bring me a raya from a Yavama where that's the whole point. That first stage is over with the Yavama. She's already yours. So the fact that you could come around now and complete that kinyan with Bia, of course, that's the whole point, isn't it? Tomar bezosha ein zikukava omenet. In this case, you're coming from nowhere. You're trying to create a relationship that is a step towards marriage. So how do you know that Bia does anything? That's the point of Talmud Lomar. That's the idea. Okay, so now we've gotten 2 out of 3. Ain't bad. But we'll do the rest tomorrow.